So I think we'll get this meeting of the Story County Board of Adjustment started. Roll call, please.
McGill.
Here.
Carlin.
Here.
Youngberg.
Here.
Brecky. Absent. Bruns.
Here. Okay. Looking in front of you, there's the agenda for this afternoon's meeting. Do I hear any adjustments, any changes? If not, we'll stay as presented. Also in front of you is previous minutes from our previous meeting on January 17th. Do I hear any changes to it?
I didn't see it.
Not, then I'll accept the motion to
accept the minutes.
Second.
Motion and second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, moving on, just a little bit on how this meeting is going to work. What we'll do is we'll go through the agenda. We'll have a time first for any public comments that are not dealing with any of the business that's listed on the agenda here. And then after that, if there are none, we'll move on to the hearings that we have outlined. Once those are done, we'll hear from both sides, and then we'll close it up and we'll deliberate, make a decision on the requests that are in front of us, so you should know when you leave here where we stand. Also, I would ask if you would, if you've signed in over here so that, we know who is in attendance, and also if you address anyone from the podium, if you'll please state your name and address, we'll also have that for the record. So, any comments having to do with any of the, with anything but the agenda items that we have here in front of us tonight? Hearing none, we'll move on to our first one. We've got discussion on the consideration of CUP 04-86.2 ONG Midwest Pallet Materials.
So we have a minor modification to a previously issued conditional use permit for mineral extraction at the South Pit site at 30 and 35 intersection that's operated by Hallett Materials and OMG Midwest. It is to allow the expansion of the stockpile area to the south of the existing stockpile area. The expansion will be approximately 7 acres. It is not an expansion of the conditional use permit boundary. It will be the stockpiles will be in an area that was previously approved for extraction. And there's no other aspects of the operation that are changing here. So there's no new crushing plants that will be located in the stockpile area or anything like that. And the applicant is here tonight, and so are several other folks working on the project with Hallett Materials and OMG Midwest. And they prepared a short presentation for you as well that we'll get to after this.
Okay.
So some background. The extraction use, again, is located at the Interstate 30 and 35 intersection in the southwestern side of that intersection. It's approximately 218 acres located on 7 parcels in that area. They dredge materials to create different grades of sand and gravel. That they also use crushing and washing and other processes to create those aggregates at the site. But again, this is just a consideration of expanding the stockpile area. Expanding the stockpiles will allow them to separate out washed materials from unwashed materials or materials that don't meet Iowa Department of Transportation specifications from materials that do, which will allow them to basically expand the supply and what they can keep on site, and thus what they can sell. So we're really looking at diversifying the product by allowing for greater separation of the different grades and different types of materials that they dredge out. The reclamation plan that was approved through the most recent conditional use permit for the site showed that when the extraction is done, it will be left as a lake. They will do some grading and seeding and planting. I also want to note that our comprehensive plan has a strategy related to this area and the desire to work with Ames to explore and prioritize the Hallett Materials extraction site for reuse and revitalization after that extraction site is, after the extraction use is over. And so I think Brett will speak more to what they've done at Ada Hayden as well. So the previous CUPs, there have been four for the extraction on the site. The first one was in 1987. That was just for the four southernmost parcels. So Hallett Materials applied in 1987 just to mine on the four southernmost parcels that are currently part of the site. Manat then applied in 1989 for another conditional use permit on the northern parcels that are currently part of the site. Both had several conditions related to the height of the stockpiles, time frame to follow in completing berming and planting, dust control. And then in 1994, Manat leased the northern extraction site to Hallett's, and so another conditional use permit modification was approved. Hallett's had a different mining pattern. It was a radial pattern versus what had been approved for Manat's. So that's why that conditional use permit modification was requested. Through this modification is when the existing stockpile site was approved. The existing site is 720 feet by 900 feet. And again, there were several conditions related to dust control and screening. The most recent modification was in 1999, and that was an insignificant modification, so not something that came before the board, but basically what they did is they took the extraction plans and the reclamation plans for both the north and the south sites and combined them. And so it was an approval of those combined plans. One aspect of those plans that I want to touch on is that the unified extraction plan shows landscaping and berming on the eastern portion of the site adjacent to Interstate 35, and that has not been completed and is will be required to be completed. So moving on to the proposed use, the proposed location is on a 47 net acre parcel that is adjacent to 560th Avenue. The stockpiles, again, are proposed to occupy a 7-acre area in the northwesternmost corner of this parcel. The northeastern corner is where the southern extent of the pit is located. I know you have site plans out there that you're referencing. The stockpiles are proposed to be a maximum of 40 feet in height, which is in line with previous conditional use permits and required heights for the A1 agricultural district. And again, the existing stockpiles are directly north of this proposed expansion area, and the existing berm that separates these areas will be removed and new berms on the south and west sides proposed. They've submitted a stormwater pollution prevention plan as part of their NPDES permit that's required that went through some construction plans. So this slide is about kind of the process that was outlined. In those, so you will place silt fencing on the western edge of the site. Then they will construct the proposed berms for screening. Those berms will be 10 feet in height above 560th Avenue. They will be using topsoil from the site that will be stripped from the site. The berms will be stabilized with seeding, and trees will be planted on those berms, and then they will install a gravel base and pad for the top, for the stockpiles. They also have offered that they will provide dust control, and we are recommending that adequate dust control is provided as a condition of approval. Here is a vicinity map. I don't know why the color projector is off today, but it looks kind of blue. So here you have South Dayton Avenue and South Dayton Place. The site is where this little star is. And so you can see this is 30, this is 35. Here's Ames and Nevada, and we're located in Grant Township. Kind of zooming in here. Here's the proposed stockpile location. You can see this is the existing stockpile location approved for previous conditional use permits, and this is the pit. There is a residential area about a half mile across Interstate 35 to the east. There are no other adjacent residential properties. To the south, you have a site where an asphalt plant was located this summer. If you remember that application that came before the board last year. And then over here to the west, you have two commercial sites that are located within the city of Ames. This westernmost of those sites is where a temporary batch plant was located this summer for Manat. It's a former truck stop. There still appears to be like an auto use at this commercial site. If you go further west along Southeast 18th, there is an approved conditional use permit for a construction and demolition landfill site for Manat located here. And then you have the interchange with Dayton Place located here to the northwest. These are the Ames Urban Fringe Plan sites, or Ames Urban Fringe Plan maps, and floodplain overlay with the site. The subject property is in a natural area in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. It's located in the floodplain. You can see here this floodplain map shows it's in the 1% annual chance or 100-year floodplain. The site is not located in the gateway protection area of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. Some of the other parcels associated with the extraction use are, but this one is not. So we're not expanding the stockpiles into the gateway protection area with this proposal. As you saw from the previous slides, traffic follows South Dayton Avenue to Southeast 18th, and then the access is located across South Dayton Place from Southeast 18th to the site. They will continue to use this access for customer trucks, and all roads to that access are paved. The farmer that currently farms the site will continue to do so on the areas not used for extraction. And they have left a strip of land from a separate farm access for him that you will see on the site plan. Again, they submitted a National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit, and that's been approved by the DNR. They also proposed a stormwater drainage ditch to be extended. There's an existing ditch that they will extend to collect stormwater that may run off from the addition of impervious materials. And that site will drain to the pit. They've also met our requirements for equivalent landscaping to new impervious surface areas being installed. And a floodplain development permit will be required. And here's the site plan that we have in front of you. So again, it's 710 feet by 430 feet. And you can see the farm access here, and then there's the stormwater drainage ditch here. So here are a few site photos. This is looking south from South Dayton Place, kind of by the truck stop looking south. This is looking east from Southeast 18th onto the existing site. You can see the existing stockpiles here. And this is landscaping that was completed as part of previous conditional use permits. Here's another view looking east at the plant and the way station and existing site. Now we're looking east from South Dayton Place on the existing stockpiles, so you can kind of see what the berming may look like. This is pretty close to the roadway, the view onto the stockpiles back here. And this is the berm that's similar in height to what's being proposed currently. This is looking east from 560th, which is what South Dayton Place becomes, onto the existing berm that will be removed. And then this area, which is where the proposed stockpiles are proposed to be located. And this is looking northeast at that same area. And here you have a view to the north of the existing stockpiles and the berming that will be removed. So staff has concluded that all standards of approval are met. We recommend two conditions of approval. And so I just wanted to really briefly go through the standards of approval and then go through just some points for your consideration, but not really dwell too much in all of the details, unless you have questions. So just let me know. So as you know, we have standards for compatibility, that there should not be interfere with the development of adjacent property, transition, that there's suitable transition provided including buffers, traffic, that there's adequate ingress and egress to the site, parking and loading, that all off-street and parking loading areas as required by the ordinance are provided, the standards for signs and lighting, and standards for environmental protection. That includes that the development shall be planned to operate in a manner to safeguard the environment. And we also, if you conclude that all those standards are met, you must also conclude that the development will not not adequately safeguard health, safety, or general welfare of persons residing in the area, impair adequate supply of light and air, create congestion in the roads, diminish or impair property values, or not being in accordance with the Ames Urban Fringe Plan in this case. And so some points to consider on how the application meets these criteria. The mineral extraction use has been permitted through previous conditional use permits until 2035. The stockpiles are in existing use at the site, and the proposed stockpile height is consistent with what was previously approved and our requirements for the A1 Agricultural District. There's no additional processing of materials that will occur in this new location for the stockpiles. And the boundary of the conditional use permit will not change. And the area is currently in agricultural production, but the farmer will continue to farm the site that is not in extraction use. They have proposed 10 feet in height berms, and those berms will also be 80 feet in width, and those will be constructed prior to the stockpiles being constructed. Those berms are proposed for the south and west side, and we are also requiring that the landscaping on the east side of the site be completed in accordance with previously approved conditional use permits. They will be installing a gravel base pad on the site to for help with dust control and protect the stockpiles from contamination, but we do recommend a condition that that dust control is adequate to meet our environmental and compatibility standards. They submitted an NPDES permit, and they've also proposed a stormwater drainage ditch to drain into the existing pit. They've also proposed silt fencing to meet erosion control requirements, and they will need a floodplain development permit to be approved. Again, there's no adjacent single-family dwellings. All access roads are paved, and the customer truck will use the same access as they have previously. There is a reclamation plan for the site, and that includes it being left as a lake and additional landscaping and grading occurring. We have in our Cornerstone Capstone Comprehensive Plan a strategy to prioritize the Hallett Materials location for potential reuse and revitalization. And finally, regarding the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, this area is located in a natural area. And the natural area designation is part of the rural urban transition area. And that urban transition area has a policy to permit interim development such as this to occur in a manner that will support the long-term urbanization of the Ames Urban Fringe. And we feel that as the stockpiles are providing a greater supply of gravel to help Ames grow, that this principle and policy of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan is met. So with that, comments from the interagency review team and public, we just had a comment that there was an easement on the property for a telephone company that they needed to be aware of. We sent notification letters within a quarter mile on the 14th of February and have not received comments. We also routed the application to the City of Ames and the City of Gilbert, as they are a party to the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, and received no comments. So your recommendation is recommendation 2, to approve the conditional use permit with conditions. And those conditions at the bottom of the slide you can see are that a floodplain permit shall be approved, and appropriate on-site dust control measures shall be provided as needed to meet compatibility and environmental protection standards. And so with that, if you have any questions for me.
Who monitors the dust control?
Yeah. So they do. And they do have a... we asked the applicant about their process for when dust control is applied. But, you know, if we received a complaint, and and found that the dust control was not being adequately provided, then we would take action to ensure that.
And what are the methods of dust control?
Mm-hmm. They can apply calcium chloride solution or water, but they are providing a gravel base for these stockpiles so that the base is not just dirt. And the roads are paved to the site as well. So previous conditional use permits were more concerned with dust control because those roads were not previously paved.
Mm-hmm. And why hasn't the east side berm been completed?
Good question. So I think my best guess is that the insignificant modification that occurred to create that unified plan for extraction in 1999 didn't include any new structures, anything that would have required an inspection, essentially. But now we are looking at, you know, installing stockpiles, installing berms. I will be going out there once that all is completed to check the dimensions and the size.
I listen to you.
It's been brought to their attention.
Yeah.
Any other questions for staff or?
One more.
Yeah.
Is there any chance that if there, for some reason, would be a lack of the dust control, that dust control would affect the traffic on 35?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm not sure.
We're talking obviously high wind.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, with that in mind, if they know it hasn't been treated, are they the first
right.
to get on it, or
right.
or is still their monitor?
I think we can ask them about the procedures for when dust control measures are applied.
Mm-hmm. I know it's
yeah.
not that close to 35, but it's not. Mm-hmm. You know, if we have incoming tornadoes or something like that, would that be an issue?
Right, and again, we're not creating any new
no.
dirt that will be erodible, really.
Okay.
The berms will be stabilized, and there will be a pad that's put down over the stockpiles, but I do understand that gravel creates dust, too.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah,
kind of.
And usually in the summer, the winds are out of the south. I don't know what percentage of the time.
That's also Highway 30.
Freeway you're dealing with.
Yeah, I know. As long as all those aspects have been addressed, mm-hmm. I just wanted to make sure.
Sure, absolutely. Yep.
Okay. So, welcome to the applicant.
Do you want us to specifically answer the last question? Or
yeah, that's probably, I think it's pretty much been laid out. That's go right ahead. Could you go here and let us know?
My name is Joe Pilley. I am environmental coordinator for OMG Midwest Howlett Materials. Regarding the last question as far as dust control, the area in question, we have what's considered a wet operation because it is a dredge operation. All the materials are carried from the dredge up into the plant, which is on the west side of the site, and then the materials are then processed in a wet materials mode. We do have some potential for possibly crushing at some point because the larger materials are separated off before the screening is carried out for the sand and smaller gravel materials. Essentially, because it is a wet operation, the likelihood of having a dust problem is pretty slim. The area that we might have a little bit of dust issue is on hot, dry July, August days, where at the entrance and then onto the outside roads. Those would then be treated with application of water. We try to keep the dust down as best we can. You spoke of hurricane or tornado conditions. Act of God, I'm not sure we can promise you anything. We'll do our best. We do train our people. In fact, we had a training session Monday and Tuesday of this week where we try to train our people to watch out for this type of thing. If they see that there's a dust issue becoming a problem, then they are expected to treat that dust, make sure that dust stays in a limited amount. Essentially, does that answer your question, I guess? Is that... Okay.
Any other comments?
Personally, no.
Brett White, is our
have a little presentation put together on what all the materials has done in the past.
Everyone in the Ames area, I'm sure, knows of Lake Ada Hayden, but my name is Brett Whiteley. I'm geologist and land manager for OMG Midwest, based out of Ankeny, so I do a lot of work with felt materials in the backyard here. So the Lake Ada Hayden Park used to be known as the Ames North Pit. Currently we call the pit that's in question for the conditional use modification Ames South Pit. And you can see here, if you look at the picture, and like you said, colors are off a little bit, it's not the highest res photo, but this is actually when they were doing reclamation, and you can still see kind of roads and different things going on. It's not the final product. I just wanted to point that out. Go to the next slide. Hall Construction opened up in the Ames North Pit in 1958, went for 35 years, and you know, a lot of those materials that were pulled out of there, I don't know the final number that actually was pulled from there, but they were used at the university for I-35, US 30, and just, you know, general uses. So there was a lot of benefit that the city of Ames had with that, and you can see that it's a little dated method of extraction that they actually had a drag line, which, you know, it's not as much as a wet operation as we're talking about. So, you know, with the updated extraction, things like dust control are better, easily mitigated. And that's actually the old drag line there. Apparently, it was a legacy around here with what I pulled here from the Ames Historical Society. Then when Hallett Materials was done, it was taken over by the city of Ames in 2002, and it's been developed, you know, into a park, and it's a huge recreation area in the northern section of Ames. And you can see, you know, it's 430 acres. Majority of that is the lake that is there. Hallett Materials did do a lot of the reclamation working with the city. And with that CBC that Amelia was speaking about, you know, this is something that I would assume that will happen at the end of the Ames South Pit. And if you've ever been there, it's a very nice facility. You know, birds like it, and they're growing. The city's growing quick in that area. So, next slide. And this is a more current picture. I don't know a specific date to it, but you can see, if you saw that other smaller picture, you know, there's it's built up in the middle. There's no pond on that little island that used to be the actual processing area. The two lakes, parking lot, walking, biking trails. And you see the city encroaching on it, and there's wetland areas over to the side there, too. So it's very diverse area for recreation. And I'm a alum of the geology department of Iowa State University, and actually did some work out at Lake Ada Hayden. They have different monitoring and testing wells, and test different aspects of the water out there. Bill Simpkins, I gave a little quote from him that was in the Iowa State Daily. That he did a big study, which I actually helped work a little bit with, that due to making an artificial pond during drought conditions, that you actually up the capacity of the Ames Aquifer. So, you know, that in itself, not only the recreational aspect of it, you know, it helps the community in ensuring that there's enough water, you know, for industrial uses and residential uses as well. And they're still doing tests out there. This is actually my intern, Garrett, out there doing a little undergrad project or thesis. So they're still testing the marine sediments and, you know, monitoring it to make sure that it falls in, you know, compliance with everything. Go next one. You know, it's pretty pretty straightforward that, you know, Lake Gatehaven has been a very big benefit to the community. And at the end of the mine life for the Ames South Pit that we're speaking about, that this stockpile expansion modification would allow us to bring material up, segregate it into different stockpiles, as we were saying, certified, non-certified, because you can't have any blending of those. And right now, it's pretty tight there. So, you know, we'd be able to benefit the community with, you know, even the I-35, US 30 ramps that are going in and Manats in the area.
Can I ask, will the south pit be, when you say it's got more mineable material, does that mean it will be larger in girth, or will it be deeper, or both?
Deeper.
Okay.
So on average, it's about 80, 85 feet in depth below the water. And we actually have done some modifications to our dredge so we can actually hit the bottom of the deposit. So it has expanded the mine life to it. I mean, right now, estimated, you know, about 14.5 million tons of production material. So we're looking, you know, 20-plus years that we could be there.
How deep is Beta Hayden?
That I don't actually know. That was a little bit before my time. When we were doing the tests out there, we were using actual drilled wells. I want to say it's around 50 feet is the usual drag line.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, there will be a huge benefit to Ames, and this modification can help us work faster and also benefit the community more.
Thank you. Any other questions? Any other comments on the board or any other staff? Not, we'll close and go into deliberation. Excuse me. Any questions of the public? Not hearing any. We'll close and go into deliberation. Good thanks, staff.
I'll entertain a motion.
Okay. I move we pass the recommendation. The young lady presented.
Let me pull it back up
here. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. There you number go. Two.
Yeah.
I'll second that.
We have a motion out of Bruns, second out of Youngberg. Roll call vote, please.
McGill.
Aye.
Scarlett.
Aye.
Bruns.
Aye.
Youngberg.
Aye.
Here you go, guys. You got your. Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on. Next one up is the consideration of CUP 0917 Raspberry Hill Resort Bed and Breakfast. Event venue. Emily?
Okay. So we have a request before you today for a bed and breakfast and event venue. The applicant is Brad Perkins. The proposed property is located at 5500 240th Street in Ames. The property owner is the one Chaffin McKay Trust. So just a little bit on the overview of the proposed use. This is a new conditional use permit application. The request includes an 8-bedroom bed and breakfast, which would include an addition to the existing dwelling. And an event venue for up to 300 people. This would be a new construction on the site. So here's our vicinity map. You can see airport here, South Dakota Avenue here, Highway 30 here. So the site's to the southwest of the city of Ames in Washington Township. It's located about a quarter of a mile south of the city of Ames corporate limits. The property surrounding the subject property is primarily zoned A1. There is a few properties right here that are zoned AR, but primarily the subject property and the properties kind of surrounding to the west are all zoned A1. The property itself is 74.11 net acres. And to access the property, you travel approximately 3/4 mile along 240th Street west of South Dakota Avenue. So looking at the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, the designation of this property is urban service area, urban residential, and then also natural area. The urban residential requires annexation of the city prior to any subdivision or additional residential development, and is to include a minimum average net density of 3.75 units per acre. The property owner did request an amendment to the Ames Urban Fringe Future Land Use Map, and the City of Ames City Council decided not to take that up. That came up when the initial application submitted by the applicant included a commercial campground. Staff felt that an amendment to the Ames Urban Fringe Plan would be necessary to have a commercial campground at this location. This application does not include that. So here's the a visual of where the single-family dwellings are located in comparison to the site. This is a single-family dwelling on the subject property. There's a couple dwellings to the northeast, one directly to the southwest, to the very close, adjacent to the property line there, and then a couple that take access off of 400th, and then a couple that take access off of 250th there. So just some more details on the bed and breakfast. The bed and breakfast are going to be 8 rooms. Four of the rooms would be in the existing home, and then there would be an addition to the dwelling that would include 4 additional rooms. They're looking at accommodating approximately 20 guests for a nightly, weekly, and monthly rental. The 4 rooms in the proposed addition would be ADA compliant, and the applicant does plan to reside in the lower level of the dwelling. Based on the seating capacity of the dining room, which would be 20, the applicant is permitted to hire 1 employee. Breakfast will be served for the guests of the bed and breakfast. The event venue would include the proposed construction of a 4,400 square foot structure for up to 300 guests. This is planned to be used for weddings, receptions, corporate retreats, and parties. All venue meals would be catered. There won't be cooking facilities in the venue space. There will be space for serving food, but all meals would be catered. Wedding planning, groundskeeping, catering, event services will all be contracted out. There'll be ADA compliant restrooms, and the proposed hours of operation are from 8 a.m. to 12 a.m. to midnight. Outdoor activities and music may be permitted. Outdoor music would end at dusk, and indoor would end at 11 p.m. So this is a site plan provided by the applicant. All proposed development would take place on the south side of the creek that's located on the property and runs kind of diagonally through the middle of the property here. The access is off of 240th Street, and they have about a quarter mile of a driveway to the existing dwelling, and which is the driveway is currently paved. So this is zooming in a little bit on the site plan a little bit. The existing dwelling is located here. The proposed addition to the dwelling is located to the south. That would be part of the bed and breakfast. The lodge would be located to the southwest of the existing dwelling. Access would be off of 240th Street down the driveway, and then loop kind of beyond the addition into a drop-off area located to the southeast of the event venue. This is looking a little more detail on the site plan. There's gravel parking spaces located here for the bed and breakfast. There will be a total of three paved ADA compliant spaces. One will be located immediately adjacent to the dwelling here, and then there will be two located with paved access to the event venue. The applicant is required to plant trees to meet our standards for parking, landscaping requirements. Here are some drawings provided by the applicant. The main hall, the goal of the aesthetic is to match that of the dwelling. This is the proposed addition to the single-family dwelling, which would include four rooms. There's some site photos. This is the driveway off of 240th Street. We're looking south down that quarter-mile drive. This is looking west along 240th Street. And then looking north toward Highway 30. Highway 30 is located right here. You can see some of the structures on the north side of Highway 30 there, more over by like Perfect Games, and there's a couple hotels there as well. This is looking east along 240th Street. This is looking south toward the existing dwelling. This is looking southeast at the existing dwelling. This is the creek that runs through the property. So you can get an idea of the size of that. This is looking north at the rear of the existing dwelling. The proposed addition would come off of this this part here. This is looking southwest toward the proposed event venue. This is an existing accessory structure. The event venue would connect to that for added storage. This is the existing parking area on the east side of the dwelling. So there's quite a large parking area there. Of course, they will need several more spots, so that will be they will be added to the south. This is looking north toward the proposed addition to the dwelling and event venue. So we're just south of the dwelling now. This is looking, the property is quite large, so the dwelling is located pretty centrally on the property. This is looking south from the dwelling, kind of where the proposed parking area would be. This is looking north toward the dwelling from the south end of the subject property. It's hard to see, but this is the dwelling here. This is looking west toward the adjacent dwelling from the south end of the subject property. This is the dwelling that's immediately west of the property line. This is looking south at the agricultural property to the south. And this is looking east from the south end of the property. There are, if you look at the aerial image, there are quite a few trees along that eastern edge of the property. And this is looking southwest from the site of the proposed improvements toward the adjacent property. So in terms of standards of approval, compatibility, the proposed bed and breakfast will occupy the existing dwelling and a proposed 2,300 square foot addition. The proposed event venue will be a 4,400 square foot addition to the site. All proposed development will be located on the south side of the creek. the area is zoned A1 and AR, which permits agriculture, single-family dwellings, cemeteries, stables, parks, and forest reserves. Current land use is limited to single-family dwellings, agriculture, and natural area. The addition of an events venue serving up to 300 guests could potentially have a major impact on the immediate vicinity due primarily, we believe, to potential noise and traffic. Again, the event center's hours are 8 a.m. to 12 a.m. The Ames Urban Fringe Plan designation of urban residential does allow future annexation by the City of Ames. The Ames Zoning Code would only, though, permit a two-bedroom bed and breakfast in the district that it would be annexed into. The proposed commercial use may limit future residential development of the area. Transition. There are many trees and a large natural areas on the property that may act as a partial buffer for the proposed uses. All development, again, will be located approximately a quarter mile south of 240th Street on that southern side of the creek. The landscaping requirement of 20% of the impervious surface being added to the site will be required, and this should take place in areas to further screen the use from the adjacent properties. In terms of traffic, the average annual daily traffic on 240th Street is 60 vehicles. That was in 2015. Those are the latest numbers we have. Based on the applicant provided us an estimate based on 50% capacity of the bed and breakfast, the applicant estimated approximately 16 additional trips along the stretch of 240th Street each day. That's an increase of over 25% on that road. With an events venue, we can expect that to be much greater of an increase. For about 300 guests, there will likely be between 100 and 150 vehicles traveling to and from the property during any event, and that could be a total of between 200 and 300 additional vehicle trips. The applicant is proposing to work with local hotels and shuttle services to provide transportation to and from the event venue, and that would reduce the number of cars traveling along 240th Street. Parking lot. The applicant is proposing 58 parking spaces, some of them gravel, three paved ADA spaces, and then the remainder would be are proposed to be grass with geotextiles for stabilization, and I have an image of that here. The bed and breakfast is permitted 10 spaces based on the number of rooms. And the event venue is permitted up to 75 spaces, which is one space for every four seats. Story County does have parking maximums, so that we discourage overbuilding of parking areas. Let's see. So staff is recommending a condition that the parking stall areas be clearly marked in order to meet our land development regulations. Here's an image provided by the applicant, an example of geotextile parking. I will let him speak to that if you have any questions on it. It's just a way to stabilize the earth and while keeping it the green space there. In terms of signs and lighting, ADA compliant signage will be required for the parking. Any proposed signage will need to meet the requirements of the land development regulations, and likewise the outdoor lighting will need to be in compliance with our regulations. Environmental protection. There's no proposed site improvements located within the floodplain. The floodplain follows the creek there. An area equivalent to 20% of the impervious surface added is required to be installed as landscaping. This is about 5,500 square feet of landscaping. The applicant will be required to design the proposed building and site improvements in accordance with the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual and the state Irvine design standards for erosion control. The applicant will need to monitor the water across the driveway and make any adjustments to keep the access safe for the general public. We did include a letter from the current property owner discussing that there has been a few times over the past several years that the driveway near the creek, where the driveway crosses the creek, has flooded. But he has indicated that's only been 3 or 4 inches, and it's only happened a few times. I believe a lot of that has to do with keeping the culverts under the driveway clean, so much of it could be prevented. So looking at analysis, if the board concludes that all the above development criteria will be met, it must recommend approval of the application unless it concludes that there's a strong probability the development will not adequately safeguard the health, safety, and general welfare of persons residing or working in adjoining or surrounding property, impair an adequate supply of light and air to surrounding properties, unduly increase congestion in the roads, hazard from fire, flood, or other similar dangers, diminish or repair impair property values nearby, or not be in accord with the intent, purpose, and spirit of the land development regulations or the county cornerstone to capstone comprehensive plan. So comments from the interagency review team. Environmental health spoke to the septic system, and it's designed for a 4-bedroom house, which is the current dwelling. With this proposed addition, that will require an increase in the tank size and the laterals. An engineer will be required to do the soil analysis on the site. There is one well on the property that was drilled in 1997. It's located about 120 feet south of the dwelling. That should be noted. That should be protected from any parking and traffic with a protective barrier. The county engineer commented that his comments would be similar to the last proposal for the site, and that would be to require dust control in front of the residents along 240th Street in the event that traffic increases to 150 vehicles or more per day, and that's included as a condition in our recommendation. The assessor's office just said they will review and value the improvements made to the property, and will review the classification of the property after the improvements have been made. Comments from the general public. We did mail notification letters to surrounding property owners within a quarter mile of the site, both on January 26th prior to the P&Z meeting, and then again on February 9th regarding the conditional use permit application. We did receive a request for application materials from an adjacent property owner's attorney. We also received comments from Mary Greeley Medical Center, which included questions about emergency response and the ease of access for emergency vehicles, signage, lighting, addressing for identifying specific buildings, and then if an AED or first aid bleeding control will be available on site. It's recommended that they have these things. Information on the proposed conditional use permit was routed to the city of Ames and the city of Gilbert on January 22nd. At the February 7th Planning and Zoning Committee, and I will, we did receive a letter from the city of Ames, and I'll speak to that in just a minute. But at the February 7th Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, several members of the public spoke in favor of the proposed bed and breakfast and event venue, including the need for a facility such as this in the community and to the character of the Perkins family. We did have an attorney representing an adjacent property owner that expressed concerns regarding the existing YSS conditional use permit that was granted for this property, the impact of the proposed event venue, and the impact of 300 guests on neighbors. The The attorney spoke to maybe limiting the number of guests to fewer than 150, and that was the number proposed by planning and development staff during the first year. I'm sorry. The gravel road is not lit, and so that he stated concerns regarding the safety of the road, also fire safety, and the saying they would not be supportive of additional conditional use permits on this property or an expansion of the proposed conditional use permit. So we did, again, route to the cities. Following the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting on February 15th, the City of Ames Planning and Housing Director provided a letter to Planning and Development staff to share with the Board of Adjustment and is proposing the following conditions for approval. Limit the number of events per year or hours of operation and reduce the event venue capacity to be more in line with the size of the bed and breakfast. Dedication by covenant of 40 feet of right-of-way along the south side of 240th Street prior to initiating use of the property. Agreement to participate in future assessments for public improvements at the request of the city. Review of the technical requirements and Xenia's ability to provide water service that would accommodate future fire protection and provide information prior to the approval prior to the approval of the conditional use permit application. A covenant acknowledging that the property owner must voluntarily participate in annexation at the request of the city.
And why did Ames say that?
So originally when we routed this, because they're within the Ames Urban Fringe, the 2 mile area of the cities, we route any conditional uses, subdivisions, anything that takes place within that 2 mile radius. Originally they said they weren't going to provide comments. However, following the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, they did. And we tried to, we tried to address the capacity of the event venue by limiting, by proposing a condition that limited the number of guests to 150 during the first year of operation and following, which the applicant could come back to the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Adjustment to increase the number of guests to 300. And at the same time address any concerns of the neighbors. So we did try to address that. As you'll see, the Planning and Zoning Commission removed that condition in their recommendation.
These comments that were provided by the city staff were similar to the comments that were provided for the YSS conditional use permit as well.
Okay. And why is the City of Gilbert involved in this?
They're part of the Ames Urban Fringe plan. And anytime we get development requests, subdivisions, conditional use permits, variance applications, we provide that information to them.
Typically, they don't have comments on a project like this on the south side of Ames. But if it was
depends on the
location. Yeah, right. I get that. That was just so far away.
So, just some points to consider. The general provisions of the Story County Land Development Regulation Ordinance are intended and designed to meet specific objectives of Section 335.5 of the Code of Iowa, including encouraging efficient urban development patterns, securing property from safety, secure safety from fire, flood, panic, or other dangers, to protect health and the general welfare, and then to facilitate adequate provisions of transportation, water, wastewater treatment, schools, parks, and other public requirements. The objective of the conditional use permit process is to encourage compatibility of the proposed development with the environment and with existing and future land uses in the area. The location of the proposed addition to the dwelling and the proposed event venue are well buffered from the adjacent properties through existing vegetation. It's important to note, though, that adding up to 300 people and potentially 100 to 150 additional vehicles along 240th Street will likely be noticed and heard by the adjacent property owners. At approximately 50% capacity, the proposed bed and breakfast is anticipated to increase the average annual daily traffic along 240th Street by over 25%, with the addition of the event venue could increase this traffic even more. And just note that 240th Street is a gravel road. The proposed bed and breakfast, if annexed into the City of Ames, would be non-conforming to the zoning district. The Ames Urban Fringe Plan Land Use Framework map does designate this area for future urban residential development with a maximum average net density of 3.75 units per acre. So at the February 7th Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, Planning and Development staff recommended approval of the conditional use permit application with the following conditions. The first one was that the event venue shall not accommodate more than 150 guests per event for the first year of operation. After this time, the applicant may apply for a conditional use permit modification to be reviewed by the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Adjustment to increase the number of guests to no more than 300. The status of the conditional use permit would be assessed by county staff. And appropriate recommendations would be made to the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Adjustment based on the feedback received from adjacent property owners and the general public. The second condition is all parking stalls shall be clearly marked in order to meet our regulations and our general site planning standards. The third one is that applicants shall provide dust control on 240th Street adjacent to the existing and future dwellings. If daily traffic counts to and from the subject property exceed 150 vehicles per day. At any time, Planning and Development Department may request the applicant hire an engineer to study the traffic counts along 240th Street. A site plan meeting all the requirements of Story County Land Development Regulations shall be submitted for action by the Story County Board of Supervisors prior to any zoning permits being issued. So at their meeting, the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval of the conditional use permit with three of the conditions proposed by staff, removing the first one that would limit the number of guests for the first year. So if you have any questions, I can answer them at this time.
All right. This is basically the same property that YSS brought to us this fall.
It is the same property.
And in essence, it's the same type of site plan, isn't it? Very similar?
Very.
By same, what do you mean by same?
At that time, they were proposing a structure, they were proposing flow. We had a lot of the same questions that we have had here. With the CUP that was approved already, what does this do now, and who is actually owning the property?
Currently, Mr. McKay and his spouse own the property, but before this submittal, we had discussions, communication with the county attorney's office, our representative, about the request to make the submittal. We were told that we could not deny the applicant the opportunity to make a submittal for a conditional use permit for this request, and that ultimately, if the conditional use permit were approved, that it would be up to the property owner to decide which application they would want to go with.
So we basically got two balls in the air on the same property.
Correct.
Okay.
Jerry, is there any recommendation for square footage in a structure that's going to house the 300 people? How many square feet per person?
It's a 4,400 square foot event venue.
Yeah, but
Story County has not adapted a building code
at this point.
So we don't have anything in our regulations that address
because it sounds like it's pretty small when you figure out it's only 14 square feet per individual, whether in that building.
and it could accommodate up to 300.
Yeah, they're going to have to stand off close together if you got tables and chairs set up.
I know the applicants have given a lot of thought to how they would, you know, how they propose to do the actual arrangements.
And then the other question I have, if we're going to have four bedrooms in addition to the house that are ADA available, but we only got one parking spot by the house, what's the other three people going to do if they fill all the bedrooms with ADA people?
Well, there are three additional ADA compliant spaces to the south, near to the event venue.
But how far is that from the house?
She can show you the proposed concept.
No, I just want to know the distance.
It's connected, I think.
Adjacent to it.
So it's pretty. Here's one space. There is more paved. I showed the existing parking there. There is more paved space there.
It looks like you got the ADA people walking or carrying a long distance from the event center to the house if you got more than one room rented to an ADA person.
From and I guess the applicant would have to work with the individuals to accommodate their needs.
Doesn't the parking have to be ADA compliant, which means it has to be within a certain footage?
There is ADA compliant one space located here. Again, we do have parking maximums, and so not more than one space would be required for bed and breakfast.
So you'd have ADA compliant parking for the bed and breakfast, as I said, and for the event space. Okay, for each use.
And it was the residence is 3/4 mile off of Dakota?
About a quarter of a mile.
A quarter of a mile. So really the, well, traffic.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm off of 3/4 of a mile off of South Dakota.
Okay. So really, as far as traffic jams, it's not like when we had that fall or the subject matter of the apple and fall pumpkin farm, it's not like they were traveling miles and miles on a gravel road. Mm-hmm. So to me, the main concern for the traffic, and I can't imagine that wouldn't be able to be dealt with, would be stop signs and or certain signage to allow, I'm not exactly sure the north and south traveling, but as far as going west into the property, it's not like a long way in.
3/4 of a mile.
Where they're going,
it is gravel.
Where they're going to interfere with existing heavy truck or farm implement traffic of that nature. Is that correct? It's basically car traffic.
There is agricultural properties.
But they're mostly south of the property?
south and then also north and west.
Farther west. Yeah.
So this is the subject property here. There's egg production to the north, west, and then also to the south.
So where does this put us with, if the YSS issue is an issue, is this an issue? Or do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
That's where I was coming from.
Yeah.
The other question I had is we had a request a few years ago. Lynn, do you remember it? From Black's Farm for an entertainment venue?
Yes.
Very similar to this.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
We did.
Okay.
There's no doubt Ames can use this type of venue. And the fact that it's on almost 80 acres to me is a very high plus. The fact that it's the residence and the lodging is going to be into the middle of the property is a plus. The fact that it's in a natural environment, there are people, there's the type of venue they want to produce is a very needed thing in Story County. And so, but that's not our job to decide on those merits. We have to go into the compatibility and...
But
all that kind of stuff. So I'm...
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's hear from the applicants.
Yes.
And hear from the public.
Good afternoon. My name is Brad Perkins. My wife, Gina, and I, we are the applicants. We are seeking to buy this property to turn it into the project that you have in front of you. I am currently a senior lecturer at Iowa State University. My profession is I'm a licensed professional mechanical engineer, design buildings and that type of thing, and so that's what I teach at Iowa State. Given that particular occupation, I have time, you know, in the summers looking for other things to do. And my family and I, we were looking for a family business that we could start that would capitalize on some of the things that we're passionate about. We do quite a bit of traveling with the kids, and what we've found is that we're not really big fans of hotels. And, you know, when we get the chance, we like staying in, you know, natural type of areas. We normally travel by RV. But on occasion, we've stayed at places like, you know, places with cabins, maybe a bed and breakfast, rarely, but a few times. And our thought was to start, you know, start with this. Emily, could we turn to the site plan, please? So our thought was to, one, increase the lodging opportunities in the Ames area. Couple that with a natural setting so that people, there's already trails and open areas cut through all the forests. It's hard to tell from the site plan, but the southwest part of this is essentially all trees, and it's in a forest preserve that already has trails cut through it. So someone could stay at our location and you know, enjoy the outdoors, you know, the pond, the trees, that type of thing. But just a bed and breakfast isn't enough financially, but also I come in contact with a lot of young people, you know, with my profession that are right at that, you know, mid-20s looking to settle down, and I have students that go all over the state looking for wedding venues because in Ames, as I'm sure most of you are aware, trying to find a venue like this, there are a few. You know, there's the winery just north of town, a couple of the golf courses. I believe even the city of Ames is building an event venue, maybe as part of the Aquatic Center. Not sure on that, but anyway, if you look at those places, many of them have wait times for the desirable parts of the year of up to 2 years. So with that in mind, what we want to do is create a venue where people staying there or going to the venue could also have lodging on site and not leave. With only the 8 bedrooms, that is probably family, you know, bride and groom and maybe the family, maybe for small family reunions and that type of thing. We hope to expand some of our options on lodging, but that's a later conditional use permit that we might discuss another time. But our intent here is to be able to give a guest a place to stay on property as much as possible, and then everyone else would be able to stay within, you know, it's 3/4 of a mile to the road, and then it's only another 3/4 of a mile to the hotels that are directly across Highway 30. If those would be full, then it's only a couple miles more down to the next, you know, the next interchange and even the next one that puts them within a 5 to 7 mile drive of most of the hotel capacity in the state of, or in the city of Ames. Now, with regards to the event center itself, the city or the county of Boone has not incorporated a building code. So being a mechanical engineer and the architect that I hired, we used the International Building Code, which is the default for the state. The 300 occupants for that is based on what the International Building Code calculates. I listed its maximum allowable occupancy for a venue of this size. Now, if I have tables and chairs in there, we're not going to be able to get 300. But for my application, I need to tell you the maximum amount that would be allowed by the building code. And that's how we got to that 300 number.
Am I allowed to?
Please.
How many square feet is that international code?
How many square feet is the international code? This is 4,400 square feet.
Yeah, I know that, but per individual, if you use 300.
I think they use, for banquet seating, I think they use around 12 square feet per person. But I'm a mechanical engineer. I could ask my architect exactly.
whatever that allowable for banquet type seating that they use, that's what he used for that 300.
So you're saying that if it's a dinner,
yes,
wedding reception,
yes,
you're going to have a lot less than 300.
Absolutely.
If it's
less than
standing reception where they go to food, you know, to stations and they have standing tables and,
yes,
and not, then you can serve up to 300.
By code, I could have 300 people in here, yes.
Correct.
My intent is for a couple getting married to be able to invite 300 and then as many people show that show.
Right.
Okay. All right. My intent is not to pack this with 300
right.
people.
Right.
Right. You'll notice, given my parking areas, every car would have to have six people in it to get to 300.
Okay.
My intention is not, and you'll notice, we didn't go for the maximum allowed by code. We went with fewer than allowed because I want to encourage people to, one, use, you know, we're CIT Transportation. I've been in contact with the owner there. He had suggested this to me as I was formulating this plan. He says, you know, a common thing with weddings now is to rent a vehicle so no one, even if they're serving alcohol, nobody's driving. I've only talked with a couple of couples that are interested in using the facility when it's available, and they were both very, very interested in contracting driving services. You'll notice the driveway there is sized large enough for a 45-foot vehicle to make that turn. 45-foot being that's the largest vehicle that you're going to find on the road without a special use permit or without a kingpin, you know, like a semi that could make the corner. Two reasons for that. One is I might very well have buses shuttling people back and forth, but also 45 foot should accommodate any emergency vehicles that should, if they were ever needed. I don't think the city of Ames, Gilbert, or Kelly has anything larger than 45 foot straight truck. So that would accommodate any of the emergency vehicles. All right. Back to the parking. We wanted to keep things as green as possible. Emily, could you please turn to the site? There we go. You know, with the geotextiles.
Yeah.
Okay. The intention with the geotextiles is that this isn't exactly the one because I don't really want to see that grid, but this way it could at least illustrate to you what's going on. With geotextiles, what you do is you fill in, you know, it comes in like a almost a either circular or hexagonal shapes that are like this thick. So what you can do is you can fill it with dirt, you know, topsoil and grass, grow grass, have a green space. But this, the center where the gravel is, if we put a uniform gravel through there, it'll drain water really well. The natural, as we saw in one of those pictures, Emily, can I trouble you to turn to the picture looking south that kind of showed where the parking lot was? There's a little bit of natural slope there anyway, there, you know, coming towards us. So I wanted that to be uniform graded gravel so that it drains adequately. And the driveway with the gravel becomes my drain plan that slows the water down, retains some of it, but yet I don't want anyone walking through puddles. And I want it to be stable enough that we can park cars on without damaging the grass. Ideally, what we're really talking about is, you know, probably what I have in my current plan right now is, you know, a wedding on the weekend, maybe one other smaller event during the week. I mean, I'm a business owner. I hope it's a little more, but realistically speaking, that's where we're going to be, I think. And then I want that grass to be able to be, I want the space to be green for as long as possible. Only parking on it occasionally will allow it to stay green and still keep most of the area as green as possible. Emily, could you turn back to the parking, please? Back to the ADA. It is not required by code to have four ADA accessible rooms in a facility of this size.
The site plan.
Yes, the site plan that has the parking. Thank you. But my wife and I, we have one child that one of our kids has some autoimmune functions, and occasionally he's in a wheelchair. And what we have realized is how unhandy facilities are that aren't set up for it. So rather than turning any of the existing rooms into ADA-compliant rooms would be difficult. So hence the expansion. Right. Also, we only have to designate one, but if you'll look beside there, there's that whole area just to the east of the house is actually paved already. I have to designate one, but if I have four people staying there, they're going to park on the pavement, and they will be able to be close enough that it'll be easy access to their room. Right. So yes, one is designated. Yes, I have four rooms that we're going to make handicapped accessible because that's our choice. Right. I'm showing one space handicapped accessible because that's what's required to be code compliant. The others are going to be close enough that it would also be easily accessed if they wished. Right. And then, yes, there are other spots. For this number of parking spaces, we had to show two more. But our intent here is that with the drop-off area, that if there was a need for more, if there was more handicapped individuals coming to the facility, that they could be dropped off really close to the front door. Right? So, yes, you're right. We have four rooms that are handicapped compliant, not required by code, but you know we're making them that way because we feel it's important. And then we're only showing the one, and there will be others, though, that could be easily accessed. Did that answer your question on accessibility? Okay. All right. Let's see. Did it answer the question with regards to occupancy, the number of people there?
Yeah. Okay. I'm thinking a lot less than 300.
What's that?
I'm thinking less than 300.
I think there will be less than 300 people, too. I don't really plan on it, but I wanted to tell you what the code says that we would be allowed. Not what I'm going for. And I do think honestly, this building was quite a bit smaller until I started talking to people that either, you know, young people in the process of you know, planning a wedding, also people that, you know, we have with us tonight. I have a young woman who's wanting to become a wedding planner. That we're hoping to work with on this, and it, she says that it's very common to have invitations for 300. If you'll notice, if we look at this facility, is actually larger than the facility at the winery just north of Ames. But on their website, they say, you know, accommodating up to 275 guests. I'm sure they're working off the exact same numbers, or this is what's allowed. Yes, we could accommodate it, understand it'd be very crowded, and, you know, invite 300, confident that we'll never get there.
So what's the target number that you have in mind?
That I have in mind? Showing up, if we invite 300 people, I'm thinking 200 would probably show.
Okay.
You know, 200 people at four people per car if they're sharing rides and traveling back and forth, that gives me 50 cars, right? Which is, we have, I think it is 53 spaces here, or 57.
Who's the wedding planner?
Right.
Isn't it basically you have a minimum of 10% attrition off your invitations and up to 30% usually unless there's a snowstorm or something? I mean, do you know the number? I mean, that's... If you invite, I'm sorry. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a normal RSVP no, it's 25%. Yeah.
So if we look at, Emily, could trouble you again to go back to the picture that shows the paved parking area right beside the house right now as it currently sits? There. All right, that is the side of the house, right? Beside there, you know, additional paved areas. Those are existing. That's where we would come off to go towards the event center. Now, back on to, with the traffic area. What we have tried to do with our idea for a business and county zoning law that really limits me to with the bed and breakfast and the event venue staying outside of the city of Ames, that limits me to land that is zoned agriculturally A1. What we tried to do is find a piece of land zoned A1 but yet does not have current agricultural operations going on because it's frowned upon on taking land out of agricultural use. I also wanted to find access. If we go, Emily, can I trouble you again? The overall picture showing the showing Highway 30.
I think where that's located.
It's like one of the very first ones where it shows the property location.
Yeah.
Okay, this would work. This would be. Oh, wait. The further out view, I'm sorry. It's probably there. We're 3/4 of a mile off of Highway 30. So trying to find land, Zone Ag 1, that has no row crops or other agricultural production and is green and scenic enough to make it work, but also large enough that my event center is planned on being at least 1,000, if not 1,500 feet for all the nearby residents. You'll notice that it's located here. At first, I had put it to the west of the creek where YSS had put their facility. In speaking with the owner adjacent to the west, they asked that I not put it on that side. It was his suggestion that I move it to the east side of the creek. And in the interest of being a good neighbor, I said that is a reasonable request. I can put it there, and I can still keep it about, it's right about 1,500 feet from each of the other property owner houses. Given the natural topography with the hill of the land and also the existing trees, it'll act as a good buffer. Good buffer for both sight and sound. Also notice that now, as far as sound goes, we're still close enough to Highway 30 that you can sit there and hear traffic at Highway 30. So it's not exactly perfectly quiet, but it's as close to a highway and close to a major access and still properly zoned of a property as I could find that's available for sale in Story County. Now, with regards to the condition, you know, some of the suggestions put on the Planning and Zoning Commission, I've already spoken with the two property owners there that are between this driveway and the highway. I was already planning on, no matter what the traffic counts are, their thoughts on dust seem like a good idea. So I'm probably not going to keep track of traffic. I'm just going to go ahead and put the, if I'm able to purchase it and do my project, we're going to go ahead and put the dust control anyway. That seems to make good sense. Let's see. Speaking with, I don't know if you had a chance to read through the comments from the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, but the property owner directly to the north, the left one, he spoke. He said he didn't see the traffic as an issue. I'll let you read his comments if you would, you know, if you get a chance, if it's material. Otherwise, everyone that I've been able to speak with has been, you know, fairly supportive of the idea.
So. Are you saying that the property just north of that road,
yes.
The 240 is?
Oh, no, I'm sorry, no, not north of the
saying,
road.
No, I was going to ask that. Is that owned by the city?
No.
That is owned by the McKays as well.
Yes, the property just north of this road is owned by the McKay family.
I thought in order for you to be annexed by the city had to own the adjacent property.
The corporate limits of the city of Ames is that red line on the north side of Highway 30.
Yeah. So, but there was something in one of the things that you were presenting that the city.
It was a future agreement. They were requesting a future agreement for annexation, not immediate.
That
means
the city was
sitting. It's
time to
document when the city's ready to
voluntarily be annexed if they chose to.
If we could turn to their comments, you know, I'd like to mention those briefly. My wife and I started on this over a year ago. We first looked at this property, then found out YSS was going to purchase it, gave up on it. You know, we were looking elsewhere. Then YSS has at least, you know, backed out of it. So it was available again, right? I've met with about everyone in government I could think of. It's been an interesting process. Usually as an engineer, I don't get involved in the locating of sites. They've already worked these things out, so this has been a learning process for me. Their comments here, first, they were opposed to everything, and then in one of our meetings, they said, yeah, we would support the bed and breakfast, and then here this last week, I haven't had a chance to write a written response to this, but I would like to discuss these. Limiting the number of events or hours of or number of events per year and reduce the capacity. The problem with that is that as a small business owner, I'm already terrified of going bankrupt. I mean, you know, the first couple of years are always the hard ones. I have to pay to build the entire business today. It's not something, the event venue isn't something I can phase in. So if I build a facility that can accommodate by code 300 people, I have to be able to market it to someone. What I don't want is to say, hey, I've got this great event venue, and someone said, I said, well, this year I can, you can invite 150 people, and next year you could invite 300. I don't want to miss out on potential customers because of that limitation if I have to build the entire structure originally. Financially speaking, I'm not sure. I would not be very comfortable with that limitation on the number of people because I'd be afraid I would miss out significantly on the amount of business with all of the initial capital costs. I think by, you know, being a mechanical engineer licensed to practice in the state, following codes are incredibly important to me. I mean, that's how we got to that 300 number. That's how we get to the number of handicap spaces for ADA. Whether or not the county is inspecting, this facility will be in accordance with code because I have to do it according to my license. So I would like to use it as it's designed for its intended purpose. The next item, the 40-foot right-of-way along there, I guess I would like to see plans before agreeing to something like that. But the big ones for me are the next one. All right. Agreement to participate in future assessments. One of the staff at the city told me how this agreement worked. It would be I would agree to pay whatever they think is appropriate whenever they think it's appropriate. How much do they think it's appropriate? I said, could you give me an estimate? He's like, well, that could probably be over $1 million. I said, when? Don't know. And then it was, well, and if we came on the north side of the creek, you may not even be able to connect your sewer system to it. So I said, let me get this straight. You want a blank check today with no ability for me to control costs and no ability for me to say no later in the future. As a small business owner, I'm not sure that's a great agreement. Okay. Future fire protection. The building we are going to choose, the size and the materials that we are building out of specifically so that we do not have to fire sprinkle this building. As a mechanical engineer, I know the very great importance of fire sprinkled buildings, but you do not have to fire sprinkle buildings. The county system does not have the pressure for it. I'm talking like a large commercial suppression system. Maybe a residential one, but not one for the event venue. So what we're going to do is avoid fire protection by material selection and by number of exits and by system building size. And the next on voluntary annexation, once again, when I asked about this, I couldn't get a whole lot of, there's no timetable, and there was no, as was mentioned earlier, they might say, okay, here's your business, and now you have 8 bedrooms, you can rent 2 out. You know, in the same meetings, they said, we wouldn't let you expand this business anymore, and we prefer that you weren't in the city limits anyway. I've lived in Iowa my entire life. Most of my adult life has been within 20 miles of the city of Ames. My wife and I are trying to start a small business, which is fairly difficult and daunting by itself. I'm not all that keen on signing agreements without knowing exactly what I'm agreeing to, when I am expected to pay for it, and what that is going to look like. What I'm asking for with the conditional use permit is to be able to use the land as it is currently zoned now, today, for the intent of it today. Yes, someday Ames may swallow us all up. We don't know if that's 5 years or 20 years. My wife and I are in our 40s. We do this for 20 years. I may be able to sell it to someone else and let it be their business, their development. Emily, can I trouble you to go to the site plan again? With regards to this someday being residential, here we go. The overall site plan, if you would. This is 70 acres, and I am adding currently in this plan, 6,000 square feet of building. All right. In agricultural terms, that's a decent-sized machine shed. Nothing that I am doing is going to prevent somebody someday from turning this into a residence if they so choose. But when they own the property, they are free to do that at their heart's content. Right? My request is to be able to do, as it's zoned today, to be able to use it that way under the conditional use permit with the agreed upon conditions as set forth as by the Planning and Zoning Commission. Are there any questions I could answer with regards to my conditional use permit?
I commend you on your location on the property.
Thank you.
Because the last one that was in here, that was one of the sticking points on the that we had the discussions over. I think you've insulated yourself fairly well. So.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, I will say it does come at a price. You know, it is a big chunk of land. That being said, I think it'll work. You know, we're close enough to that highway and close enough to other services like hotels. You know, catering is an example. There's no need to have a commercial kitchen in this facility with so many good catering options within Ames area. You know, so it cuts down on initial cost but also cuts down on the code issues. No commercial kitchen, no grease traps, no fire suppression systems, you know, on and on. No health inspectors. We buy food, they bring it here, we serve it, we move on.
Good point.
We are or are not obligated to implement what the city is asking in that, because I agree a lot with most of these that I think some of their requests or things that they want him to do are way ahead of the game, and without knowing what they would be signing, I don't think it's a fair request from the city for that to take place.
Let's hear our comments and then we'll deliver.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
That's probably a good idea.
All right, sorry, I was ahead of the game. Sorry.
No problem.
Okay.
I guess I just wanted to know.
What's that?
Any other comments?
My last comment is, you know, with regards to that, I have a copy of the Ames Fringe Plan with me.
Okay.
And it does say that they are allowed to comment. They do not have approval authority.
Thank you.
Right, and I believe that would I think, Jerry, you would agree with that statement.
Right, I mean, these are things that they're proposing to be conditions to be added to the action this evening by the Board of Adjustment.
Okay. That's, and we can
this
hear
is
it.
Entirely up to the okay. Board of Adjustment.
Okay. Any other? All right. All right. Thank you very much.
Questions in the public?
Ladies and gentlemen, I represent James W. Polensky and Teresa Shai Polensky, who are the owners of the adjacent property to the west and slightly to the south of where Mr. Perkins is describing. My name is Greg Irvanian. My address is 317 6th Avenue, Suite 900 in Des Moines. the Polenskys, some of the previous ground about the previous cup, the YSS thing, has already been covered. I'm going to kind of truncate some of my comments related to that, but I will say that it is a significant concern of the Polenskys ongoing. And I think if the Perkins cup is granted, I think that does create complexities and problems that everyone needs to be aware of. My first comment is that obviously Story County has already issued a cup to YSS. We know that that cup relates to the same property upon which the current cup depends. Both projects can't be constructed or operated on the same property, and therefore the Polenskys feel that a condition of granting this cup must be that the existing cup has to be dismissed or terminated or released or relinquished prior to any action or effect being given to the Perkins proposal. That the validity of that previous cup has been challenged by the Polanskis in district court, and it's set for hearing in May of this year. And I think that needs to kind of play itself out as a condition of what the Perkins are proposing. The other initial comment I would make is that the granting of this, if this second cup is granted while the YSS cup is still there, affecting the same property, I think it does not encourage efficient urban development patterns such as are required under Iowa Code Chapter 335.5. I think it creates the opposite of that. I think it creates confusion as to what is going to become of this parcel of property. Both projects can't coexist, obviously, given their proximity to each other, given the proximity to the adjacent property, and particularly my client's property, and just the nature of the two proposals. They could not peacefully coexist or safely coexist, in my opinion. The second issue is with regard to the event center. I'm not so sure that the event center is a permitted use under A1 zoning or under or as a conditional use. The bed and breakfast clearly is, and Mr. Perkins made reference to an earlier, I think, communications he had with the Polanskis, where the Polanskis said, you know, as long as you develop, you know, on the, let me get my directions straight here, the east, I guess it would be the east side of the creek, where it's currently proposed, that they were pleased and supportive of it. The Polanskis would tell you that conversation was about the bed and breakfast, not about a 300-person event center or anything else. So that the event center, when that discussion came up, was new to the Polanskis. So that is an issue. And the staff comments for this meeting, as well as the meeting from 2 weeks ago, planning and development, show that they have concerns about the size of that thing. Maybe, as was pointed out, maybe 4,400 square feet is far too small for 300 people. Maybe 4,400 square feet is suitable for half that. I mean, half was the number that staff has suggested for at least the initial year to see how things work out. The facility should be smaller than 4,400 square feet. But the concerns are that 300 people, if that comes to pass, 300 people coming to an event at that location, in addition to whatever number of people might be at the bed and breakfast, represents a 500% increase in motor vehicle traffic on that, you know, two-lane, gravel, unlighted road. It has embankments down both sides. I don't know if you know the road, but I've been there several times. And it has no shoulders. That's dangerous. And there's already local traffic, regular motor vehicle traffic, and you know, what I would call agricultural traffic that is accustomed to using that road really unimpeded without expecting, you know, buses and a lot of cars to be coming by. And certain times of the year, agricultural vehicles, farmers, are working late into the night. And I really do worry about the potential for catastrophic events given that big of an increase in traffic. I just don't think that road, not a long stretch, as Mr. Perkins pointed out, it's not a long stretch from that property to get back out to the main road and up to 30, but it is a stretch that is narrow, dark, gravel, unlighted. That's a big problem with that big of an increase in traffic. And if a wedding event there is like virtually any wedding event I've been to, people are going to be having a few drinks, and which is fine. But, you know, this place is supposed to be open until midnight. They want us to be open until midnight, fine. 11 o'clock at night, midnight, dark, narrow gravel road, unlighted, local traffic, a few drinks in you. That's a potentially a big problem. And what the Polanskis have suggested, and what I suggested 2 weeks ago, is that the number of people permitted at the event center, if an event center is granted, and again, we don't think that an event center is a proper part of this project. If it is to be granted, it needs to be, we need to get our arms around what the number is. How big is the building? And those, though code might say it accommodates 300, I don't think that's practical. I don't think it's practical for the building. I don't think it's practical for the location or the local population or the infrastructure. I think it's dangerous, as a matter of fact. Staff has suggested 150 for the first year, kind of to see how things go, with kind of a review process after that. We said if this cup is to be approved, we think it should be conditioned on something like that. We suggested a smaller number, about 100. Maybe give that a run for 2 or 3 years to assess traffic counts, to assess safety concerns, accidents, if any of those pop up or not, and then address whether or not it can be expanded in size. That doesn't necessarily mean that the structure has to be built in components. I understand Mr. Perkins' concern about, you know, I have a budget, I have an opportunity, it's all now or nothing. I don't think I believe that. I've been a business lawyer for a long time, and I've had a lot of clients who have engaged in projects which require piecemeal implementation. I don't think it's a financing issue. I don't think it's a development issue. Be that as it may, I think it's prudent for safety concerns and for the benefit of the local residents who have spent considerable amount of time and money buying and developing their homes and properties and raising families, as have the Polenskis. I think it's prudent to stick a toe in the water for just a little while to see how this works out. The bed and breakfast is perfectly appropriate venue and function for this property. We have no objection to that. There are some issues about the hazard issues is my third point. The CUP proposal, as I understand it, still doesn't make or resolve issues pertaining to fire safety for the structures that are proposed by this by the Perkins, nor for the surrounding properties, and both are legitimate, obviously, issues of concern. Not just for whether or not the structures on the Perkins CUP can be dealt with, but if they can't be dealt with, what happens to the adjacent properties? So any consideration for approval of this CUP must be conditioned on a clear plan for the provision of prompt, adequate fire protection services, not only for the structures and operations proposed under their CUP, but for all the adjacent property owners, all of them, not just my client, and their structures, which could be jeopardized by a failure to have proper fire control. And in the, it's been some time, I know, but in the proceedings before this board relative to the YSS CUP, there's information on the record from the fire chief of the West Story Fire Agency in Kelly. That record reflected that the fire chief's concern was that there were a small volunteer fire department with limited resources, equipment, personnel, and access to water. Their agency has only one pumper, one tanker with a total of 3,000 gallons of water. That is clearly inadequate to protect the development as proposed by this CUP or the YSS CUP, and clearly inadequate to protect neighboring property structures and property owners. And I understand that just recently, in the past week or so, the West Story Fire Chief spoke with planning and development staff, acknowledged that the fire department's lack of sufficient equipment, size, or capacity to address fire emergencies at the site for either this CUP or the YSS CUP. The fire chief stated that any other equipment and or personnel necessary for fire response would have to come from other fire departments, such as those from Slater, Huxley, or Gilbert. I don't know the abilities or capacities of those fire departments. And there's nothing in the record to reflect what they are. There's no information in the record about the ability or desire of any of those fire departments to assist in any meaningful capacity. Don't know if they're on board to assist if needed. There's no information as to their response times should they decide to participate in fire protection services. So prior to approval, if one is to be granted. This CUP application needs to have specific fire protection plans and commitments in place that adequately protect these structures, the proposed structures, all of the people in them, that's a lot of people, and all of the adjacent properties. In the summer months, that is dry tinder out there. And I would imagine a fire could spread far and quickly. So that's a big concern. So that is an issue that we think needs to be a condition of any consideration of approval for the current CUP. I know we've been over this a little bit, and I think I know the board's feeling about this, but the staff report also included a February 15th letter from the City of Ames with its specific proposals for conditions of approval of this CUP. We think the granting of this CUP should be specifically subject to all five of the proposals from the City of Ames Planning and Housing Department. The property, one thing I would also, I guess, like to mention is, and this is actually a good view to do that, I'm not sure that there's really much information at all about the extent, size, or placement of lateral fields for the septic system for this planned development. Now, it's going to have to be, you would imagine, pretty significant in scope and size. I don't know how many acres that would encompass, but I'm guessing it would encompass a lot of property. And I believe that that is subject to Iowa Department of Natural Resources approval. I think they have to sign off on that. I'm not positive about that, but I think that is a requirement. That's a big deal. I don't know where those lateral fields are going to run from this proposed development. I would assume they have to go south and either south and west or south and east. But that is a big, big deal. And lateral fields and septic systems, especially of that size, always pose a potential for environmental contamination, especially if adjacent to a creek. I don't see anything in these plans that addresses what could be fairly serious issues. This is not, if it's going to be 300 people plus up to 20 people in a bed and breakfast, that's a pretty big deal. That's a pretty big lateral field. So we would ask that any consideration of approval of the Perkins CUP be conditioned on a detailed plan about dimensions, location, operations, all of that, about installation and placement of the lateral fields, and that consideration be given, obviously, to concern for the environment in the event of a break in the lateral field or a failure in the lateral field, the creek especially, and the adjacent properties. And we would ask that any consideration of approval of this CUP be conditioned on no expansion of this project under this or any future CUP that extends to the west of that creek, the Worrell Creek, so anywhere west and south from the current proposed site of the Perkins CUP. And I believe that is kind of the highlight of my my comments. I'll answer any questions you might have, or I'll just sit down and be quiet.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Sure. Yes.
My name is Doug McKay. I live at 3016 Burnham Drive, Ames. Technically, my wife owns this property. She has given me permission to speak, and which Emily has a copy of that. I have a few comments about the prior speaker. One, he admitted that he didn't know much about septic problems, about septic tanks. And I know that there's already been a discussion about the septic systems out there and how they would be able to be work fine. He talked about the fire, the problem with fire protection. the current driveway to the house, as Emily pointed out earlier, is paved, which makes it very easy for a fire truck to get down in almost all weather. I mean, obviously, when it's icy, it's difficult. In the springtime, especially, it's not so easy to get down a gravel driveway. And Polinsky's driveway is longer, and it's gravel. They would have more of a problem with protecting their house than they would from this facility. And as for the farm equipment going down the road at night, I lived on that road for 18 years. Now, I will grant you that the traffic is a little heavier, but the farm traffic is not very heavy. I own the field across the street. The people who farm it live to the west. They come and actually the field that's right across the street is accessed from geez, I don't know what the name of the last north or south street is, but the street to the west. So they don't come down that gravel road. Once in a while, there's some Iowa State vehicles that come down the road, but the farm traffic is very limited, and I don't remember the last time I ever saw anything go down there at night. As to ISS, I talked to the county attorney a couple, 3 months ago when we were first talking about some of this stuff. And she said there's no problem getting another conditional use permit. You don't have to get rid of ISS. Well, back up just a little bit. The conditional use permit, which I don't really know whether it's been issued or not, but it has been approved. I assume that the lawsuit has to go through before it gets issued, but the conditional use permit goes with the land, not with ISS. So if it is approved or ever gets issued, it would belong to my wife. If this one is issued, it would belong to my wife. And if you've ever, if the lawsuit goes through and the county wins and YSS is allowed to buy the property, that just puts us in a position like a lot of people are when you try and sell your house. You might get two or three people looking at it, and you might get two or three people, ideally you get two or three people that want to bid on it and run the price up for you. I doubt that that's going to happen, but it would give us a choice of which one we wanted to sell it to. But at the moment, YSS has sort of backed out. They never really had a contract with us, and they didn't want to sign one. So, you know, that's still a possibility, but I wouldn't say it was a very good possibility. The other thing that you mentioned about this, I thought it was very interesting that you were astute enough to realize that this ground is not adjacent to the city limits. And I own, not my wife, but I own all the ground between the County Line Road and South Dakota that's north of 240th Street. So unless I put that ground in the city limits, the only way the city could get that ground into the city limits would be to go into Boone County get enough people to under the 80-20 rule to take in another 100 to 250 acres, which would be another 1,000 acres of ground into the city limits to force that ground into the city limits. I don't see that happening. And frankly, if the city keeps fighting me on all that, this is the fourth project I've tried to get to do with the city limits, with the city of Ames to develop this ground, and they've been refusing on every one of them. Just, I guess it's been 3 months ago now, we went in with a proposal to put all our ground into the city limits, all the ones that I own, not the ones, and build houses, and the city said, no, we don't want to do that. We don't like your plan. And that, like I said, this is the fourth time, and I won't bother you with the other three. And frankly, if you think that I'm going to be very cooperative with the city when they keep fighting me to do what I want to with our ground, you just need to kind of think about that for a while. And Polinsky's obviously don't want anything going in. They want to control our land. They're trying to, I suspect that if this conditional use permit is granted, that they'll file a lawsuit again against the county for, I don't understand what the rules are. Anybody can sue anybody. But if the land's for sale, if they want to buy it, why don't they cough up the money? I know I've always heard people, you know, somebody will have a house in town and there'll be a vacant lot next door and they don't want anybody to build on it. Okay, buy it. If you want to control the ground that's next to you, buy it. I don't think it's fair for them to try and control our ground by just hiring a lawyer out of Des Moines to come up and say, hey, we don't want you to do, we want you to do something else in our land. Maybe I should put a hog building up there and see how they like that, because frankly, you can't. I don't think you can stop that, because it is zoned agricultural. Anyway, you have any more questions for me?
Any questions?
Nine.
I have one, but I don't know if you're the gentleman versus you. The attorney makes a good point about the fire issue, and if you're going to use materials that don't require a sprinkler system, will you have like a hydrant, you know, your own hydrant on the property from Zenith? What will be your water source besides a fire truck?
Besides a fire truck? I actually asked that. One of the neighbors next door, Mr. Finch, is on the Kelly Fire Board, Fire Department. Okay. And I asked him about that, and he says, you know, we fill in Ames. So I asked him if, you know, there's a 2-inch water line that comes there now. You could get a 2-inch hose connection. I asked him, do you think that'd be wise to put a 2-inch hose connection? He goes, nah, it'd be faster. He goes, besides, we have an agreement with Ames anyway, so they'll be out there, and you know, we'll swap trucks if it would come to that.
Right. Yeah. Other thing I just mentioned, I was on the Kelly Fire Department for a long time. It's been a long time ago, but the other thing that's possible, they have the equipment to drop a big hose of about, I don't know, 6 or 8 inches in diameter that probably reach from me to you, and drop it into the pond, and use that to pump water into their tanker, and then they can go dump that into they had a portable thing, and I know I remember using that portable thing when the beef nutrition farm burned, mm-hmm. probably 35 years ago. And the reason I remember it was because the wind chill that day was 66 below zero, and we were bringing water on there for Ames.
I might add, if it's okay, we did have a conversation with the Director of Planning and Housing at the City of Ames. There would not be enough water pressure to have a hydrant out there. Additionally, the City of Ames does not have equipment that has like tankers or pumpers. It only has fire equipment that could hook to a hydrant.
Okay.
So the from what we've heard, the pressure is not there to get a hydrant on that.
But they would have equipment for a pond, you know, as you said, they need to suck water out of the pond, per se. I mean,
the
fire truck should have.
The Kelly Fire Department.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it has tankers too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Oh, did you want to address that further? The fire issue?
Yeah, with the fire issue? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
All right, absolutely. Once again, you know, the fire issue is handled two ways. Once through building construction, mm-hmm. right? Emily, could you look at the elevation views of the structure? With regards to safety, there we go. With regards to safety, you're never more than a few feet away from an exit. You know, we have way more than the minimum exits required by the building code to egress this facility safely. Right. Once again, with construction, you choose the right materials so that you're not feeding a fire. Right. Now, while I am not necessarily an expert in legal issues, things like fire systems and sewage systems, I actually am an expert in that. You know, so things like septic tanks for a structure of this size, There are systems for that. Some involve lateral, some do not. The beauty of having 75 acres is I'll be able to design a system that is compliant with county and state state DNR to have a system that can comply with that. Some of them require laterals and some don't. I look at one of the churches in rural Boone County that I helped with a few years ago. They had, at that time, it was a peat system that was able to discharge water. You know, the discharge of the effluent was clean enough that it didn't need laterals. There are systems out there just for this purpose that we are going to have to buy. I mean, I get that particular part. I don't have it designed yet because before spending the money on design, I'd like to know if I have a viable project. But the last thing I think that I would like to address here is the whole idea that the Polinskis did not know that there was going to be a lodge on this. I have some emails back and forth from Jim, dating all the way back, some of them back into summer, and the most recent ones in October, where after a discussion with him about where it was going to be, he made the comment about moving it to the other side to have a buffer between him and the event center. Jim, I've included a rough sketch of the property and the location of cabins, RV spots, parking lot, and lodge. Please note that they're not to scale. If you think this could work, I could have my architect relocate the buildings and parking lot and make them to scale for a better view. This would put them all to the east of the creek and to the south of the house. Gene and I walked the property this weekend, and trees in the location for cabins and RVs are predominantly ash trees, which she says will need removed because of the emerald ash borer, so it makes a suitable spot. Lodge will be just to the southeast of the existing machine shed and the open space there. The red lines show the approximate 20-acre buffer zone that you had mentioned. I have class at noon. Oh, anyway. All right. Goes on and on. They know what was good. They've known from the beginning what the intent here was. I have been as open and as honest with the neighbors as I could possibly think to be. I've probably pestered them more than they would like with phone calls, emails. What do you think of this? Could you give me any suggestions? The whole reason it's on the east side is at Jim's request. If we could look at that site plan, once again, please, I would be more than happy to cordon off. Right now, they've shown a 50-foot setback from the property line, which is the current code required. The Polinski home is 75 feet on a 15-acre site. They are 75 feet off of that line. I would be happy to stay at least 75 feet back. Right? I'm actually planning on staying several hundred feet back, but I would be happy to match the same thing.
The comments I made pertaining to the Polinskis related to the conversations that the Polinskis had with the applicant in the fall. Lodge, no lodge. The Polinskis were of the view that there was going to be a bed and breakfast primarily, maybe a supportive lodge. When this began, the Polinskis were not of the view that there was going to be a construction project with that many people, as is described in this cup. That's simply their understanding of the project as it began in the fall. So if there's a misstatement about that, that's me, not the Polinskis. But the Polinskis, when this began, were not of the view that this size or scope or, scope or scale of project was to be constructed. The fire issue, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but the fire issue has two components. The safety of the residents of the bed and breakfast or the other, any other facility constructed. Mr. Perkins believes that materials and construction techniques resolve that. That's fine. I think everything burns without water. Number two, protection of the individuals who might be visiting this property is only half of the problem. The other half of the problem is what happens to adjacent properties if there's a fire which is not controlled by water. Water is the only thing that's going to control fire which exists outside of any of the structures. I'm glad and hopeful that any resident has the ability to escape if there's a fire, but that does absolutely nothing to resolve issues of potential harm to adjacent properties if there's a fire which is not controlled or contained within a structure. That's So the fire issue is a two-pronged matter, I think, as of the Polensky. So we still think that the conditions are probably not satisfied for the issuance of this cup. Insofar as anything beyond a bed and breakfast are concerned, there's still absolutely nothing in this record which shows adequate fire protection for the property or the adjacent properties. And although Mr. Perkins, I would absolutely concede that I'm not an expert with regard to septic issues or lateral fields, and I would absolutely concede that he is far more knowledgeable than those things that I am. I think the application needs to demonstrate, as a condition of approval, that those that issue is met, that the latter, that the septic issue is defined, and that it meets all applicable county and state regulations as a part of the application process, and that's lacking today.
Any other comments? Anyone?
I'm Anna Acton. I live at 2715 Bobcat Drive, Unit 201 in Ames. I just want to speak to a few comments that have been made. So just thinking as a wedding coordinator, wedding event planner, one of the issues on the traffic, I'm just thinking that I don't think it's going to be as big of a deal because they'll all travel in at once. You know, we've got the reception, it starts at, you know, say 4 p.m. They all come in and they're staying parked. So you're not going to have a constant flow of traffic. And I just think of, you know, Center Grove. They've got a gravel road there. And they've never seemed to really have any issues. So I was thinking about that I don't think the traffic going on that road of 240th, I believe, I don't think that's going to be a big issue for an event. And next I wanted to talk about the hours of operation. I don't think, and with the gravel and the drinking that would be possibly occurring at wedding events, Prairie Moon Winery, which I hear might have concrete or pavement now, but, you know, it's a winery, and they've had several weddings there before, and it was gravel road and not well lit, but their hours of operation are from 7 to midnight for events. So very similar to the hours that would be here at Raspberry Hill, so I don't think that would be an issue either. And then to speak about the number of guests with the, you know, the 300 limit. We invited 307 people to our own wedding, and 200 people showed up. And it was a holiday weekend, which can either have more people that show up or less. And so it was right in that same range of a third, actually, of, you know. So we were planning for 300, but, you know, it's never really that way for events. And I know one of you on the board already stated this, but this would be a huge asset to the city of Ames with everything that Mr. Perkins has already planned for how this event venue and with the bed and breakfast. I think that'd be a huge asset in addition to having the bed and breakfast there for the family. You're not going to have 300 people plus the occupants at the bed and breakfast. I think the idea is the occupants at the bed and breakfast at the same time of the event venue having a wedding is going to be in that 300 limit. It's going to be over 300 people. If you have any questions for me, I think this would be a great opportunity for me starting a business, working alongside Brad Perkins, and I'm just very excited about this opportunity to kick off my wedding event planning business. So.
Any questions, boys? Not enough. I think we'll take a quick break here before we deliberate.
There you go.
First of all, Jerry, a couple
couple issues. Can you pull up what our options are, the recommendations, planning, zoning, put them up there on the board, please?
The recommendation by the Planning and Zoning Commission?
Yeah. Okay. Well, what are...
the Board of Adjustment Options?
Yeah.
Alternatives? Yeah, there you go.
The next question I've got for you, what really, Jerry, tell me the status, the CUP issue that we've got out here. We know it's in the court. We know that there's going to be a hearing. Where does is that CUP go with the land? Does it die if the applicant does not, or the applicant doesn't complete the purchase? What's the status of that? Well, that's what I want to make sure before we get...
We're looking up some information as far as the regulations and the Story County Land Development Ordinance. There's been a couple of comments made from the applicant and from the property owner with regard to YSS backing out. I can tell you that staff has not heard from YSS that they backed out. You've commented that there is a current scheduled hearing, a court date in May for this challenge on the conditional use permit that was granted by the Board of Adjustment to the property owners and to YSS. Usually the conditional use is similar to a variance appeal in that it does, you know, run with the land, so to speak. Boards of adjustment have the authority to require that they be for a certain sunsetted period. If you choose, you have that option in the code. That particular one did not, however. It did have some conditions. I don't know if we have those conditions with us. One dealt with the traffic counts. If they get exceed the average daily traffic count of 150 vehicles that the applicant put down dust control, we put in there a condition to have an engineer study the traffic if we receive complaints from the neighbors about the levels. I guess all I can really tell you is the county attorney's office representative said that he thought it was up to the property owner to choose which conditional use permit to go with, which applicant to support.
So it's not the property owner's decision. I guess what I'm saying, I agree. So it's not our responsibility. We can look at this as a separate issue.
Correct.
All right.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
I've got a couple of questions.
Sure.
Jerry, out in that part of the state of Iowa, we got a questionable water supply because of the I can't think of the name of the company. It runs
Zena.
Yeah. Do we have any control over saying that it's got to have an adequate water supply? You stop and think about 300 people. It's going to take some water, and I don't know if the water pressure is there to do that. I even had trouble on my water pressure.
I can tell you we've reached out to the fire chief with the West Story Fire Department to make sure that they have a heads up about this request. I don't know that we've got everything buttoned down. I think there's still questions about the existing system, the existing size, the capacity. There were comments recently provided to us with regard to protection, you know, what their limits would be based on the equipment that they had, that they do have agreements with other jurisdictions.
And that's usually what happens. You have other jurisdictions come in. The other thing, I can't think of the gal's name here in the courthouse that takes care of drain fields.
Margaret.
Has she had any conversation, anybody with Margaret, about drain field and where the groundwater is out there. If you got a creek running through the property, your groundwater is pretty close.
The Margaret has provided comments saying that if the use is approved, they'll have to do specific soil samples on the property to determine what type of...
That's after we make a decision.
Correct.
Okay, that sounds fine. That's what I needed to know.
Can you back it up? Let's see what this, again, what the...
Again, this is from the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Right.
Recommendation.
So their recommendation just states nothing in there with relationship to the City of Ames.
Correct. The letter from the City of Ames staff came after that Planning and Zoning Commission meeting.
Okay. Any questions? We want to do more.
I have a question. With the septic, is that something that Margaret would be addressing with them and giving them direction as to where it needs to go and what it needs to be?
Correct. It would either be Starr County Environmental Health Department or the state. It may be large enough to be regulated by the state.
Okay. And then as far as the water concern goes, we can't mandate what they have to be able to do as far as the neighbors are concerned, or to say that they have to have X number of gallons of water available at the drop of a hat.
You're talking about fire safety.
Yeah.
It's something to consider. You know, it's something that you have to weigh.
It's not mandated by the county at all that this that if you have an event venue with 300 people, you have to have X, Y, and Z. No.
It's just, yeah, right. I mean.
What does the winery do? Do you know? Or
to the north?
Yeah. What is in their, where would, if they had a fire, is it a Gilbert? Is it the same situation where they have Gilbert come in? Or?
Also Xenia.
Oh, they're on Xenia.
Amelia worked on a project for the brewery recently. Do you want to speak to that?
The brewery is on Wound, and the winery is on Rural Water.
Right.
And the winery is permitted through our agritourism ordinance to have an event, so it's different than the bed and breakfast accessory event center situation a little bit in that regard. And we recently adopted supplemental standards for agritourism, but when that winery received its conditional use permit to expand, have the event center, those supplemental standards weren't in place, but there are several conditions, including that it is until 11 p.m., 50 hours for special events, otherwise operating hours are 6 and 8.
As far as fire safety.
But as far as fire safety, there were no conditions on the record that I saw. But I do know they're on Rural Water, so that will be. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Back it up to our options, please.
As a question on this board, then, because this fire thing has become kind of the center of conversation, it is up to the county to make sure that the proper materials might be, or they have to meet certain fire code, no?
The county does not have a building code, mechanical code, plumbing code, fire safety code. We have zoning ordinances.
Okay. Okay.
The land development regulations.
So in other words, everything in Story County that gets built is the fire is safety is just based on our fire departments and the services that the taxpayers pay to ensure adequate fire safety.
It's up to the property owner to build it in accordance to whatever code they choose appropriate.
Okay.
because well, the county does not have adopted codes.
Well, I mean, you can't have a house that doesn't have doors or windows because of fire safety, right? There are certain... Okay.
Not in unincorporated Story County. If you're in the city of Ames or the city of Nevada, maybe Huxley, they have adopted codes that would address those types of issues.
Okay, all right.
I move that Story County Board of Adjustment approves the conditional use permit for the Raspberry Hill Bed and Breakfast and Event Venue as put forth in case CUP 09-17 with the conditions that were presented by the Commission.
A motion by Scarlett. I hear a second.
Okay. All right. Second.
We have a motion, and we have a second by member. Roll call vote.
Bruns.
Nay.
Youngberg.
Yes.
Scarlett.
Yes.
McGill.
Yes. Motion carried. Anything else,
Sam? I'm just going to give you an update. We've got three conditional uses potentially for the next March meeting. One of those involves the Center Grove Orchard. There was an application that was submitted in 2016 in the spring for a farm camp. Started with the Planning and Zoning Commission. There was some of the commissioners thought that what was being proposed for children was actually more of a daycare type of situation, and so the matter was tabled or deferred, and then the applicant or property owner decided not to do anything until recently. Property owner has had contact with the state. He's contacted the Bureau Chief for Child Care Licensing, and based on what he's proposing to do, it's viewed to be not a daycare, so this is going to be a modification to an existing conditional use permit. He's proposing to do like week-long conditional, like a farm camp to help kids learn about growing and taking care of livestock. So we'll have that. The Country Living Mobile Home Park has added RVs instead of, they've had some situation where some of the existing mobile homes have been removed and they brought in RVs. We have a process in our regulations to address RVs, RV parks, so that'll be a CUP. The applicant has submitted a separate conditional use permit for a commercial campground, which would include RVs and cabins. We're going through a process right now of amending our ordinance to allow permanent cabins in a commercial campground setting, so we'll have that. And then potentially a variance for Hickory Grove Mobile Home Park. We've had some communication back and forth with the county attorney's office on that one. That's a it's a non-conforming use, so we're trying to get real clear as to what it is that we're actually bringing before the Board of Adjustment. So we'll potentially have those four cases.
Meeting is what, 21st or the 14th?
It'd be the third Wednesday.
21st. It's the 21st. All right, and I'll be back.
And the rest of you, will you be here?
I'm getting cataract surgery.
Oh.
That's kind of important, too.
That's kind of important.
Exactly. I'm going to Hawaii.
And you're not taking it?
Tom?
Sorry, Steve.
What kind of deal is this?
I left last year, and then I left Lynn in charge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're going to have an easy full meet.
Well, we've got potentially four.
Well, I'll be back. I'll be back.
Okay. All right.
Okay, yeah.
That's all I have.
Yeah, I won't be coming. Sorry.
Okay.
Anything else? I move adjourned.
Second.
Thank you.
Anytime.